Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is a further update on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the continued losses that Russia are experiencing. Ukrainian forces are making further advances on a daily basis, and Russia is really on the back foot now. And there are rising concerns that President Putin will do something drastic to try to change the momentum of this war. And he's made veiled threats so far about a potential nuclear strike, and other prominent Russian military leaders have also suggested that a targeted nuclear strike may be the best option for Russia. And in today's video, I want to share some footage with you that's been posted on social media showing the special unit that deals with military offensives in Russia moving some equipment. And this footage has raised concerns that Russia is now getting ready to make some form of nuclear strike. So we'll have a look at that footage and go through all of the issues surrounding that. Now, in terms of the battlefield losses that Russia have been experiencing, as you might expect, President Putin is not particularly happy with this outcome. And he has started to fire a number of senior people from the Russian military. So we'll have a look at who's gone, and we'll look at some comments that have been made by the leader of Chechnya and also the founder of the Wagner mercenary unit that's being used in the Ukraine war. You may recall that I posted a video recently showing Wagner recruiting people directly from prisons in Russia. We'll then discuss the issue of censorship, which is becoming a bigger issue the longer that this war goes on. Prominent Russian journalist who was under house arrest has now disappeared. And the Russian authorities have also raised issues with regards to the information being posted by TikTok, Twitch and Wikipedia. We'll then go on to have a look at the current levels of global debt. As you may be aware, over the last few years, a lot of governments around the world embarked on what's known as quantitative easing, whereby they were essentially trying to stimulate their economies. They were putting money into the economy, and that's led to an explosion in the amount of debt. So we'll have a look at what the position is right now and how it compares to the situation in 2008 when we had the global financial crisis. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of all of the stories in today's video are for Russia and the global economy. So before we get into all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during today's video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already, still on that push for 200,000. So if you could help, I'd really appreciate that. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch the entire video, you can skip through and pick up the bits that you really want to watch. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and Amazon shopping links. And once again, I'd just like to say thank you so much to anybody that has supported the channel. I really appreciate it. Following the annexation of the four areas of Ukraine that are currently occupied by Russian forces, President Putin came out and stipulated that these areas are now deemed to be part of an enlarged Russia and that Russia will consider any means available to it to defend this territory. So the clear message that he was sending to Ukraine and the West is that Russia will be prepared to use nuclear weapons if it has to. Now, the potential use by Russia of nuclear weapons is a matter of much debate. And although Ukraine does not officially have nuclear weapons, the West obviously does, and there are multiple warheads in Europe that could be deployed in a retaliatory strike. Now, the last thing that any sane person wants is a nuclear war in Europe. It would obviously be entirely devastating for the areas that those missiles struck, and it would also have long-lasting effects both from a radiation perspective and also from an economic point of view. And whilst the likelihood of Russia actually using a nuclear missile still remains relatively low, we've now seen some footage which shows the movement of military equipment by the secretive division that deals with Russia's nuclear weapons. This video shows a train carrying kit belonging to the 12th Main Directorate of the Russian Ministry of Defense, which is the division responsible for nuclear munitions, their storage, maintenance, transport, and issuance to units. The train is carrying BPM-97 armored personnel carriers and other military vehicles, and the APCs are thought to have been upgraded with more capable turrets, reinforced ambush and mineproof armour, and air purification systems designed to allow its occupants to operate effectively in the face of sustained infantry attacks. Military analyst Konrad Muska claimed the deployment of such units could signal an escalation in the conflict and act as a precursor to large-scale nuclear drills. News of this movement comes at the same time as NATO warned member states that Russia's state-of-the-art Belgorod nuclear submarine has left its White Sea base. So this news could indicate that Russia is now starting to mobilise all of its equipment and is considering making a nuclear strike. Or it could just be posturing to indicate to the West that it's prepared to do so. Now, hopefully it'll be the latter of those two options. But the problem that we have is the more posturing that Russia undertakes, the more the West will also have to start getting everything ready. And we could soon get to a position where we see a heightened level of security. Everybody starts to get nervous that the other side is thinking about making a nuclear strike. And that will obviously raise tensions between the two sides. And the more ground and the more people that Russia loses in this war, the more likely it is that President Putin will have to resort to some form of drastic action to try to win back the momentum. The recent losses that Russia have experienced in the conflict over the last few weeks have been painful for President Putin, and he's reacted by firing a number of key military personnel. Colonel General Alexander Zuravlyov has been sacked from his post as commander of the Western Military District by President Putin. The Western Military District is one of five that make up Russia's armed forces. And this sacking follows the dramatic Russian losses in northeast Ukraine and the recent recapture by Ukraine of Liman. It's also been announced that General Dmitry Bulgakov, who is the deputy minister in charge of logistics, has also been fired. And commander of the Black Sea Fleet, Igor Osipov, has also been removed from his position. Following a series of humiliations in Crimea, including the sinking of its lead warship and the loss of 8 warplanes in an attack on a Russian base in Crimea. The Black Sea Fleet has a revered history in Russia and dates back to the time of Catherine the Great and is seen as being one of their best military units. And it's been reported that President Putin was furious at the recent losses. Russia has occupied the whole of Crimea since 2014, and this is a heavily fortified area. And the fact that Ukraine was able to mount successful destructive attacks in the area has been a real morale boost for the Ukraine troops. In addition to these sackings, as I mentioned in a recent video, the head of recruitment for the mobilisation has also been removed after it transpired that 50% of all of the men that had been called up in the mobilisation effort were actually unfit for service.
In 10 days, several thousand of our countrymen received summons and arrived at the military registration and enlistment offices. About half of them we returned home, as they did not meet the selection criteria for entering the military service. The work to achieve the goals set by the president continues. The military commissar of Khabarovsk region, Yuri Sergeyevich Laiko, was removed today from his position. This will not affect the mobilization plan set by the president. We work together with the defense ministry, our industry, and all the authorities concerned.
And just to make matters worse for President Putin, we've now got more details of the comments that were made by the leader of the Chechen forces in Russia and the founder of the Wagner Private Forces Unit that was recently featured in a video I posted whereby they were recruiting people directly from prison in Russia. He's also come out and made some statements about the recent efforts of the Russian forces. Ramzan Kadyrov has implied that there is widespread nepotism and favouritism within the Russian army and stated nepotism in the army will lead to no good. He added that the commander of the Russian forces in the Liman area should be stripped of his medals and sent to the front line with a gun to wash away his shame with blood. So he's effectively saying that the guy should be sent to the front line to pay the ultimate penalty. Such public contempt for the generals running Russia's war is significant because it indicates the level of frustration with Putin's elite over the conduct of the war, whilst also piercing the Kremlin's carefully controlled narrative. Kadyrov, who supports the war and has sent many of his own Chechen units to fight, said his criticism was the bitter truth about a Russian fighting force which he said allowed talentless mediocrities to let down the country. When asked about Kadyrov's remarks, the founder of the mercenary group Wagner congratulated the Chechen leader. He said in a statement, "Ramzan, you rock man, all these bastards should be sent barefoot to the front with automatic guns." When asked if his words should be considered criticism of the defence ministry, he replied, ironically, "God forbid." So we don't have any official response from President Putin, but I'm sure he is absolutely seething with anger right now with regards to the performance of the Russian troops in Ukraine. And the fact that senior military people are coming out and making these statements will be making it even worse for him. So there's a distinct possibility that we may see more people being replaced in the front lines for Russia. I want to share with you some stories about the ongoing censorship and the clampdown on the freedom of speech within Russia. And the highest profile example is a Russian journalist called Marina Ovsvanikova, who is famous for holding an on-air protest on Russian news where she held up a placard against the war. She was subsequently arrested and received a fine, and in July she staged another protest, this time outside the Kremlin, and was once again arrested and this time put under house arrest. It's now been reported that she's broken the terms of her house arrest and was actually reported to the authorities by her ex-husband, who released a statement saying, "Last night my ex-wife left the place that the court assigned her for house arrest, and together with my 11-year-old daughter, fled in an unknown direction." It's reported that she's now been placed onto the Russian wanted list, and if arrested, she potentially faces up to 10 years in jail. And one of the reasons why she was arrested in the first place is that following the invasion of Ukraine, the Russian authorities introduced a new law against discrediting or distributing deliberately false information about the armed forces. And following on from the introduction of this law, a number of social media platforms, including Facebook and Instagram, were banned from Russia. Now, TikTok, which is owned by the Chinese company ByteDance, was allowed to remain operational. However, no new content was allowed to be uploaded in Russia, and users were not allowed to access any overseas content. So essentially, there was a news blackout introduced on TikTok with regards to what's happening in Ukraine. And it's now been announced that TikTok have been fined for failing to delete content that violates Russian laws on LGBT propaganda. No details have been provided of the exact content that the fine relates to. However, TikTok has received a financial penalty of 3 million rubles. And it's reported that TikTok was accused of promoting non-traditional values, LGBT, feminism, and a distorted representation of traditional sexual values. Russian authorities say they are defending morality in the face of what they argue are un-Russian liberal values promoted by the West, but human rights activists say the law has been broadly applied to intimidate Russia's LGBT community. Russia is allegedly considering expanding its existing gay propaganda law, passed in 2013, which bans any person or entity from promoting homosexual relationships to children. Lawmakers have argued that the law should be expanded to include adults as well, and fines for exposing minors to LGBT propaganda should be increased. Another law was introduced in March, which prohibits discrediting the armed forces, and this law carries a maximum prison sentence of 15 years. Twitch, which is the social media communication platform used by gamers all around the world, faces two fines of up to 8 million rubles for not deleting what Russia considers unreliable information about the course of its special military operation in Ukraine. In addition to these violations, the Wikimedia Foundation, which hosts online encyclopedia Wikipedia, also faces a 4 million ruble fine for not deleting fakes about the Russian army. Now, as you'll be aware if you follow the channel, I try to remain as neutral as possible when reporting all of these news stories. But when it comes to the freedom of speech, I think we'd all agree that we want to hear both sides of the argument. You want to hear the information, assess the information, and make your own decision. And what we're seeing in Russia is the introduction of a variety of different laws which are prohibiting certain amounts of information from being shared and closing down certain media platforms and access to certain websites. Also means that it's difficult for people to be able to get a balanced opinion. Now, as you'll be aware, one of the consequences of Russia's invasion of Ukraine was that we saw a massive increase in energy costs, commodity costs, and food prices. And these increases were caused as a result of the sanctions that were introduced against all Russian products, which meant that countries in the West had to find new ways of sourcing these materials, which drove up demand, which drove up prices, and we had a vicious circle. And for the last 7 months, we've seen a lot of volatility in prices. And as a result of this, we have got high levels of inflation in most countries around the world. And as you'll know if you follow the channel, in order to address that high inflation, a lot of central banks have been increasing interest rates. So the logic is, if you increase interest rates, it makes borrowing more expensive. That discourages people to borrow, therefore they have less money, It costs them more if they've got existing debt and therefore they also have less money and therefore they will spend less. That should then bring back demand to a lower level and that brings prices down. So that's the logic. But one of the problems with increasing interest rates is the sheer amount of global debt that's in existence. And the really concerning issue right now is that the amount of debt proportionately is higher than it was at the time of the global financial crisis in 2008. This chart shows global debt as a percentage of gross domestic product. And you can see that back in 2008, global debt represented around 215% of GDP. So that means that globally, the world had borrowed 2.1 times its gross domestic product. So essentially 2 years' worth of revenue. Now, it's widely acknowledged that in the period building up to the global financial crisis, too much money was made freely available, too much debt was taken on by a lot of institutions and corporations, and that caused a major financial crisis. And a lot of institutions changed their rules and regulations. The banks had to tighten up their criteria. They needed to have more capital in terms of lending money. And so it was expected that going forward, the percentage of debt to GDP would start to come back down to a more manageable level to ensure that we never got to the same situation again. However, if you look at what's happened since 2008, there was an initial reduction in the percentage debt to GDP. However, since 2009, we have seen a steady increase in the percentage debt to GDP. And if you look at what's happened over the last 2 years, there has been a significant increase. And the percentage global debt to GDP today is sitting at 256%. So that means that the debt levels now are more than 2.5 years worth of GDP. If we look at the breakdown of the debt, this chart is split into three different sectors. The blue sector at the bottom represents governments, the green sector in the middle represents households, and the red sector at the top represents non-financial corporations. And over the last 14 years, the amount of household debt has remained relatively constant. We've seen an increase in non-financial corporations, so company debt, but the biggest single percentage increase has been in governmental debt. And this increase in governmental debt can be predominantly attributed to quantitative easing, which has been commonly referred to as printing money. So governments, in order to keep their economies buoyant, have been buying bonds, they've been giving cash to financial institutions, and those institutions are then encouraged to move that cash on in the form of loans to companies and individuals and help the circulation of money to get people spending, to keep the economy moving. And that's what's been happening over the last 5 or 6 years and why we've got such large amounts of debt today. And most governments around the world had to double down on those quantitative easing plans through the COVID period because we had a lot of shutdowns, a lot of companies stopped operating, and they needed to keep people ticking over. They needed to generate more spending and try to get the economy back up and running again. And at the start of 2022, most countries had a plan to reduce quantitative easing, to actually cancel it, to bring the economy back under control, and to bring prices back down. But unfortunately, Russia's invasion of Ukraine has put a massive spanner in the works because the effect of the war has driven up prices. So that's led to a spiraling in inflation at a time when the governments were planning to reduce all of the QE. So this has been a real problem. And where we're sitting right now is on the brink of a potential global recession. So as we've seen interest rates going up, that's putting more pressure on all of this debt because it's not just private debt and company debt. It's government debt. And a good example of the impact was what happened in the UK just recently. There were some new policies that were announced in terms of tax cuts, and the markets reacted very badly to those tax cuts. And the cost of borrowing for the UK government rose above 4%. So a UK gilt was priced at 4.2%, which meant that the government itself was having to pay that interest on all of its loans. Now, the official rate of lending in the UK at that point was 2.25%. So in theory, it was actually cheaper for companies to borrow money than it was for the central bank. Now, obviously, that's not a sustainable position because the central bank should have a lower cost of borrowing than everybody else in the economy. So the UK either needed the gilt rate to drop dramatically or it needs to increase its interest rates to above 4%. And what we've seen over the last week or so is a reversal of some of the policies that were announced, which has led to a slight reduction in the cost of borrowing for the government, but not enough to be able to justify the 2.25%. So overall, what's going to happen is that interest rates will need to be increased rapidly in order to make sure that the official cost of borrowing is above what it's costing the government to borrow money. But the point of telling you that story is that it shows that everybody is under pressure right now. It's not just private individuals, it's companies and it's governments around the world. And the fact that we're going into a period where interest rates are on the rise is going to increase that pressure. And at some point, we will start to see some failures. We'll see private individuals, we'll see companies, and possibly we could see countries going bust at some point over the next 6 to 12 months. And this chart is a good visual representation of why we've got a major problem. If you look at the history books, it will tell you that the global financial crisis in 2008 was one of the worst financial crises that we've had in the last 50 years. And one of the reasons that the global financial crisis happened was that there was too much debt issued to non-creditworthy borrowers. And the learning point from that whole global financial disaster was that we should never find ourselves in this position again. Everybody is changing their rules and we're not going to do any of this ridiculous lending anymore. But if you look at where we are today, the total amount of debt is more than 20% higher than it was back in 2008. So the world is actually in a worse position now than it was then. And because of all of the ongoing issues that we've got as a result of the Ukraine war, it's not easy to fix this position. It's going to be very difficult for governments around the world to bring inflation back under control, because a lot of that inflation is being driven by macroeconomic issues such as the price of oil and commodities and food. And many of those high prices are being driven by shortages. So interest rates will go up, but there's no guarantee that prices will come down. So we could easily find ourselves in a situation where the cost of borrowing is rising dramatically against this huge mountain of debt that we've got, and prices still remain high. So all that will lead to is that companies and individuals will have less disposable income. Therefore, they won't be able to buy as much. So demand will start coming down. But if prices continue to remain high, then we'll have a perfect storm. And there is a possibility that we could find ourselves in a worse financial position than we were back in 2008. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I think the two biggest takeaways from today's video are firstly the fact that Russia is losing this war and what are the consequences of that, and secondly the amount of global debt that we've built up over the last few years that is now teetering on the brink of disaster. So if we deal with the issue of what's happening on the battlefield first, the momentum in this war is quite clearly with Ukraine right now. They are being heavily supported by the West. They're being provided with military equipment and finance. So they are very well positioned to keep pushing Russia back. And Russia is struggling with regards to its resources. It's been reported that over 200,000 men have so far been pulled in through the mobilization. But obviously all of those men need to be trained up and then sent to the front line. And these are reservists. So these aren't likely to be Russia's best fighting forces, because these are people who up until a couple of weeks ago were going about their daily lives doing their daily routines. And now they're going to be sent over to Ukraine and forced to fight a fight that Russia is already losing. So the odds at the moment are stacked against Russia. And President Putin will not be happy at all with what's going on. And as we talked about earlier in the video, he started to replace some of his key people and he's changing the guard. But that really is unlikely to change the momentum, because just because you've got a new guy in charge doesn't mean that you've got better equipment or better forces or better strategies. So Russia is really on the back foot right now. Now, President Putin is not prepared to lose this fight. He is not going to back down. And the fact that Russia recently annexed the four regions and they've now passed all of the resolutions, he now sees these zones as being part of Russia. And he has made it very clear that Russia will do whatever it takes to defend this land. And the big concern now is that Putin will consider using a nuclear strike in order to try to bring this war to a satisfactory conclusion from his perspective. And the footage that we saw earlier in this video shows that the special unit that deals with military offensive is now on the move. Now, it could be that Putin is using this as just a warning to show the West that he's thinking about doing something, but nobody really knows for sure what he's going to do. Vladimir Putin has a lot of power in Russia. If he decides that he thinks that the right thing to do is launch a nuclear missile, then it will happen. Now, most commentators are saying that it's very unlikely. But just as a reminder, back in January, when Russia was building 100,000 troops on the Ukraine border, all the commentators said that it was extremely unlikely that Russia would actually go forward and invade Ukraine, and that they were just protecting their border to make sure that Ukraine didn't join NATO. But obviously everybody got that wrong, and Russia did go ahead, they did send the tanks in, and they did commence an invasion. So there is a possibility of some form of nuclear strike. And obviously we've discussed this before, if that does happen, then we are genuinely into an Armageddon scenario. So hopefully nobody will be proved wrong this time, but as we've seen from history, when you have a world power that is led by a single individual, anything could happen. Now, as you'll be fully aware, my main focus is to look at the economic implications of what's going on in this war. And the global debt figures that we looked at earlier are really very concerning. In 2008, the financial world went through one of the biggest disasters that we've seen in this generation. The global financial crisis wiped billions of dollars of value off markets worldwide, and we saw a number of large financial institutions go bust, and governments around the world had to step in and bail out their banking systems. And as a result of that, we all learnt our lesson and said, this can never happen again. We need to change the rules and regulations and make sure that we never find ourselves in the same situation again of having this amount of debt. But the financial world has a short memory. And if we wind forward 14 years, we are now in a worse position from a debt perspective than we were in 2008. And this is obviously highly concerning given what's going on right now. And if you follow the channel, you'll be aware that I've talked about black swan events in the past. And a black swan event is something that happens that nobody could foresee that causes a major change in the markets and usually leads to some sort of financial crisis. Now, over the last couple of years, a lot of commentators have been calling the COVID-19 pandemic the black swan event. But if we look at where we are right now, I think it's more likely that the Ukraine war would be identified as the black swan event, because nobody was expecting an old school war to take place between two modern nations in this day and age. But it's happened, it's happening, and it is having a massive impact on the financial markets. So as I've discussed before, it's quite likely that the global markets will go into recession in 2023. All the indicators are pointing to it. High levels of inflation, rising interest rates, falling GDP, all of that tells us that we're going into a very difficult period. And the fact that we've built up an enormous amount of debt, more debt per GDP than we had back in 2008, leaves the global markets in a very fragile position. So the combination of those two factors is really bad news. But what makes it even worse is that there's no end in sight in terms of this war. It's extremely likely that it'll continue for the rest of 2022, and it could go on throughout the whole of 2023. So what we've got here is a black swan event that's continuing to cause problems for the global financial markets. And when you look back at previous recessions, there's usually been a trigger point, but that trigger point then finishes and then recovery can start. If this war does carry on for the next 18 months, then we don't know where the end of that recession will be. So this could be a really dire situation. And the fact that we've built up an enormous amount of debt is going to make it a whole lot worse. So thank you for watching today's video. Hopefully you found it informative, educational, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, please give me that thumbs up. And don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.